the newly crowned all-time leading trainer, Dale Romans.
Well, Chef Edward Lee,
I'm honored to be with Dan Issel.
I'm at the offices of Louisville Public Media.
Stephen George,
budding country music star,
J.D. Shelburne.
Rocky Adkins is with us.
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show, Louisville's longest-running and most interesting podcast. Join Rick Redding, your host, as he talks with some of the city's most interesting individuals. The city's leaders in politics, business, sports, and the arts join Rick in lively one-on-one interviews, taking on the topics that are making news in the Ville. Right now, Rick's ready to get the show rolling in the Louisville.am studio. Here's Rick.
It is the Rusty Satellite Show. I'm your host, Rick Redding, and at the Rusty Satellite Show, we continue going. No matter how cold it is outside, it is we're not going to cancel here, and that is unlike some of our schools around there. I've got a lot to say about the whole school coldness thing, the controversy over Governor Bevin, and people that know me will know that this is a shocker. For the first time ever, I believe I am in agreement with Governor Bevin on something. So I'll talk about that in the second part of the show. This is the 291st episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. I thank you for joining me here. I have always promised you, dear listener, that I would bring you the most interesting people in the Ville as my guest, and I have not failed you this week. This week, I have, on the second part of the show, we're being talking about the Jewish Film Festival, which is coming for the, I think it's the 34th year. And I have my good friend Mark Prussian of the Eye Care Institute. He is on the committee that selects those films, along with Marsha Bornstein, who is the director of the big event over there. The films are screened at six different places around town. I've seen the preview of some of them. They all have some tie to the Jewish faith, but it does not mean that the films are only to be seen by Jewish people. It's really it's quite a festival of films you can't see anywhere else. And you're going to hear about it right here on the Rusty Satellite Show, which is sponsored every week by the Passport Health Plan, by the Eye Care Institute, the aforementioned Eye Care Institute, and by my friends at Heiser Health. And I'm happy to tell you that, you know, my personal health program is going very well. I'm back on the racquetball court. And, well, I have to go to the doctor tomorrow, the blood doctor, to see what caused that little episode in which I had to go to the hospital about a month ago. And gosh, two nights in the hospital. Any guess what that cost? Even after my insurance was paid, the bill is something like more than $6,000 I've got to come up with. And it really ticks me off because I wanted to leave and they wouldn't let me leave. Okay. And I was just racked up. I'm not good at being sick, and I'm not good at paying for stuff I don't want to pay for. So we'll see how that all turns out. I'm sure they're going to get the money out of me at some point, some way in the near future. So anyway, let's talk about my first guest. I was really excited. For a long time, I've been interested in talking to the new executive director over at the airport. His name is Dan Mann. He arrived here in March. He took the place of Skip Miller, who was a guest on the show once upon a time. And Dan is he's a very impressive guy. I finally got in to see him after the airport made news because it was renamed. I'm sure you saw the story in the paper that the airport is going to be now called the Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport. Now, that may be a mouthful, but it does do a lot of positive image stroking for our city. And Dana sort of explains that. It was a big push by the mayor and some other folks. But, you know, there's a lot more than that going on at the airport. And Dan is an airport professional. He calls himself an airport geek and says this is his dream job. So that's something. And I went over there on this frigid Wednesday morning and went to the offices of the Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport. I got to keep saying that to get used to it. The Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport. It is in the process of having signs changed and all that stuff. And there's a bunch of money being invested. I learned today that one of those, what did he call them? He called them jetways or whatever, the things that go out to meet your plane. You know how much it costs to buy one of those suckers? Yeah, $1 million. He just bought 24 of them out of the airport. So that's among the interesting things you'll learn if you listen to this interview with Dan Mann.
I admit, I used to think people addicted to painkillers just needed to toughen up, until it happened to my daughter. She really needed help. Thanks to Passport, we got it for her. Our doctor and her Passport case manager made sure she got the services and treatment she needed. Together, we got through it.
Find out how you can get Passport at PassportHealthPlan.com/together. Passport Health Plan. We're in this together.
And I'm here on a frigid day with Dan Mann, the executive director of, what do we call it now, Dan?
Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport.
All right. That has a nice ring to it. That was big news last week. Tell me a little bit about how that came about.
So I think it's been, I'm fairly new here. So I've been here since March of last
okay.
year. I think it really started when there was this national and, frankly, international outpouring of support for Muhammad Ali when he passed. And the whole world was watching. And,
sure.
At the time, I didn't know. My mom's from Kentucky. I'm from Ohio. I didn't know Muhammad Ali was from Louisville. And I think a lot of people didn't. And then, so I think there was saying, hey, this is one of the most recognizable people ever.
Sure.
And he had a lot of, he was, he did a lot for the community. He did a lot. He stood for a lot.
Sure.
Some of it people don't approve of, but by and large, it was a fairly positive. And so I think it was like, hey, how do we get that message out and communicate that, he was from Louisville, compassionate. How do you work out really a communication plan around that? I think so. The mayor and the board said, this is really important for us to be recognized that mm-hmm. here's the most recognizable person ever, more recognizable than Louisville, and we really ought to say, hey, embrace that. And so,
sure.
So the mayor and the board said this is probably a good thing to do, and they took a vote and said we're going to do this. And I think there was some concern that this might be controversial, but. I can tell you, we've been tracking on social media. There really has been overwhelming support for it.
Yeah.
People really, by and large, say, what a great thing.
Yeah.
And again, same thing. People, I didn't know. I didn't know he's from Louisville. And so it's been, by and large, extremely positive.
Yeah.
And now there's a lot more to this. We're just a tiny little piece of it. So you've got the gateway to the community, which is our airport, which we're very proud of. But the whole communication about what it means to be in Louisville is much bigger than the airport and that first impression that we make.
Right, right. Well, certainly as someone who's lived here all my life, I know that, Ali is ingrained in what I know, but I can see exactly what you say. And you say the feedback thus far has been positive.
Very positive.
Okay.
I mean, overwhelmingly. We tested this. We had some data from IQS about what will people think about this. And really, the data showed that about 8% will think it's negative. Vast majority will have somewhat positive opinions, but it doesn't impact air travel necessarily.
Okay.
But by and large, it was neutral or positive, very, very small. Negative.
Okay.
And our data that we show is the actual data after we made the change is that, that's about right. About 8%
right.
are negative and everybody else is overwhelmingly positive.
Well,
but bottom line is it probably doesn't impact air travel necessarily, but it does impact the narrative. And
well, it's all about image, certainly.
Imagery,
and and one thing a lot of people point out, SDF, our traditional, what we know the airport as, doesn't change.
That's right.
And so your baggage tags will still stay SDF.
SDF, all the flight charts. Again, when it comes to changing three-letter identifier, first of all, ALI is already taken. But, I mean, international, IKO, all the things that identify pilots, it's SDF, and that really has changed. The FAA would not.
Okay.
Even if they said you could do it, it would be a monumental task to do
sure.
it, and obviously they will not say.
So we're going to see signs soon.
We are working on a branding communication plan. Really, again, our piece of it's small. Yes, we'll have changes. It'll probably come out around the June timeframe is what we're shooting for. Around the Ali Festival is when
okay.
we kind of want to tie into what the city and the region wants to do with their more far-reaching communication plan.
Sure. Sure. I'm sure we'll see a lot. I want to ask you a little bit about you. I read in an article that you said this was your dream job. You still say that now? That was some time ago. So now you've been here a year. Is it still?
It is. when I tell that story, I always joke around and say most people say I should have dreamed bigger. But when I got out of the Air Force, again, I'm familiar. My cousins lived and grew up here, and they've retired from the Ford plant. They worked there. When I was a kid, I would come here, and we always had, it was always fun. It's fond memories. And so after I got out of the Air Force after Desert Storm, and I got in the airport business, and I always thought, man, Louisville would be the one. And for a host of reasons.
Because you've been to a bunch of, you worked at a bunch of airports.
Yeah,
climbed the ladder, so
yeah, this
speak.
Is my fifth airport as the airport director. But this had everything going for it. It had a population big enough to support more air service, which we've seen a great deal of expansion in the last 10 months. So population base, so you can have good air service. It had obviously the one that keeps us through all the recession proof, which is UPS and the cargo operations. So there's stability there. From that, there's infrastructure dollars that come in to maintain the parallel runway. So it just had, from an airport geek kind of thing, mm-hmm. it was like, wow, this is great. I mean, we're the third busiest airport, cargo airport in the country. So not the most in air service, but when it comes to cargo, it's a behemoth. And then some of the funding comes through that. Again, third most funding because of the cargo operation. So you got stable funding, you got activity. It supports the infrastructure, which allows us to keep our costs low for the airlines. So all those factors, when you're thinking about what it takes to run an airport, yeah. Like, man, everything is here. So I think most people say, why Louisville? They're behind the scenes, in the weeds, there's a whole bunch of reasons why this was a phenomenal opportunity. Right. And yes, I've been here a year, and I'm having probably everything I do and like doing is I'm able to do here. From I'm a business major, that business is in my core. So operating the business, the leases, the infrastructures, negotiation, the community relations, all that stuff is I'm having a blast. And then with the staff, the corporate culture, I always talk about what's the most important thing for airports, probably in any business, is it's your people, it's your customers, it's your facilities, and then having a balance sheet to make it all happen. So those four things are what drive me, and we have it here in spades. So, yeah, I'm having a blast.
Well, it's good to know. It's good for airport geeks is the great job. But you grew up in Ohio, but you said you had relatives in Kentucky. How do you, when you got the job, I guess I'm going to ask, you know, what part of town did you decide to move to, and how did you make that decision?
That's interesting. I'm living off Limekiln Road.
Okay.
I'm a downtown guy. I love living downtown. So when I got here, I lived just off like two blocks from Bardstown Road.
Okay.
So I like being able to walk everywhere I go.
Sure.
But because I've moved so many times, I've had a tendency to buy houses before my wife gets a chance to see them. And she was not about to let that happen a fourth time. So she got here and says, okay, I'm buying the house this time. And she found the location. And so I moved where she said. And it's not downtown where I can walk to the great restaurants and the nightlife. But we got a great place. And off Limekiln is easy to get everywhere. Frankly, everywhere is easy to get to here. So, but I'm 15 minutes from the airport, so it all works out.
Well, switching gears again, I read about this $125 million improvement plan here, which I know the top line thing that was always frustrating to me as a traveler is not being able to get internet in the airport. I just tried it in your lobby, and I couldn't get connected.
Oh, so. It still didn't work.
It didn't, but I'm not blaming you. I'm not mad about it or anything. But that's one of the improvements. Tell me about some of the other things that are in
so the works. We have a free Wi-Fi. So we'll definitely find out why that isn't working. It should be. Maybe it's frozen.
Could be.
Again, going back to what drives me is one of the things is customer service. I mean, we have to have the best customer service if we want to be the best airport in the country. Customer service is where it starts, and that is the amenities at the airport. It's air service. It's all those things. And so when you look at our terminal facility, the $10 million program that we finished, it made it look great, but there's still a lot of things that needed fixed or improved. A lot of it behind the scenes, the mechanical systems, lighting, the jet bridges, the moving walkways. If you go up there right now, they may not be working. That's not customer service. That's not the best customer service. And so this program is replacing all the jet bridges, mechanical systems, moving walkways, escalators, elevators. moving the rental cars into a covered parking deck that's still, I mean, one of the things customers want, they love being able to just walk out the door and get in a rental car. If it's covered, it's even better. And so we'll move the rental cars into a covered spot. Solar, you know, trying some of the green initiatives. We have 7 acres above the parking deck. We'd love to see if we could cover that with solar so we can generate some revenue that way, and have the top deck covered, actually, so it's better for those customers. Redoing the roadways in so it's a little more intuitive, easier to use, less crossing, just a whole host of things. So, and you can say, how do you get to $100 million like that? Each one of those jet bridges cost $1 million, and I got 24 of them. So $24 million just in jet bridges, moving walkways, escalators, elevators, $15 million. So these numbers is like, what's he spending $100 million? It really does add up. And then you start $15 million to move the rental cars into the parking garage, another $10 million for the solar. It adds up, but again, it's going to look phenomenal when it's done. The customer, everything we do is going to be, is this making it better for the customer? We're also doing this without increasing any debt. We think we can phase this and have it cash flow, keeping our costs low because, again, fiscally responsible. Everything has to be fiscally responsible because that's the competitive advantage we have over our other airports. Okay. And so we're going to do this and phase it in a way where we don't have to increase debt. We can keep our costs low to the airlines and improve the customer experience.
Okay.
And it's all things that that have to be done anyway. So you can't have a jet bridge that doesn't work. I mean, when that airplane pulls up, the customer expects to be my airline customer expects it, the flying public expects it. So these are improvements that will happen. And they will be noticeable. I say a lot of it's behind the scenes, but it's going to be more comfortable in terminal of the free Wi-Fi. Hopefully we'll get that fixed so it works all the time, not just some of the time. But again, it's all focused primarily on how do we make this better for the customer? How is it easier for my people to maintain the facilities and just generate more loyalty so we can continue to grow our airline business?
Okay. I'm curious about one thing. This is sort of off the board, but I read a national story about parking in airports and that the revenue at a lot of airports from parking is down because people don't come to the airport and leave their car anymore as much. But I look out there and there's all kinds of cars out there.
The revenue from parking at most airports, almost all airports, the parking revenue is the largest piece of revenue. It's the biggest revenue source that airports have. When I look out 10 years, 15 years down the road, and I see Uber, Lyft, driverless cars, everybody thinks that's crazy, but driverless cars are coming. If you have a driverless car or you Uber or Lyft, you're probably going to take that, and the car drops you off and leaves, and when it comes back, it picks you up. That is going to impact your parking revenue. It just is.
Okay. And has it yet?
We have not experienced. It probably has. We've grown 16% this last year, so our growth is outweighing the loss in revenue. So our parking revenue is up, probably not as much percentage-wise as our increase in traffic. But yes, parking, your largest source of revenue at airports is going to be impacted by Uber, Lyft, and driverless cars. It just is. And Uber and Lyft has grown almost 100% in our market already. Rental cars are second biggest source of revenue. Again, those things will have an impact on your rental cars. And so I'm trying to be as proactive as possible, saying, my parking needs to be super convenient and cost effective. My rental cars have to be as convenient as possible because people are going to have options. And when people have options, they'll exercise it. But the other part is thinking 10, 15 years down the road when your two biggest sources of revenue may be impacted by outside entities, what are we doing to make sure that we're fiscally ready for that and being competitive that way? Finding alternative sources of revenue or doing things far more efficiently than we're doing them today.
Okay. Well, that's my last thing. I just wanted to finish up and ask you about the it seems like there's an effort at the airport to get more direct flights. And I'm sure that's at the top of your list of things to do. How do you go about doing that? Is it just convincing airlines that it's worth it to do it here?
No, it is. There's a lot that goes into it. First of all, you have to have a market for it. You can't. There's one thing to be aspirational, saying I would like to have more air service. That's fine. Every airport would like to have more air service. So you have to have a market. We have a market for it. The other part is making sure our costs are competitive because the airlines, there's no more mobile asset than an airplane. So they can take that airplane wherever they want. And so we have to make sure that we have facilities and we're not charging them too much. And so our rates and charges are excellent here. driven largely by how much activity UPS generates. So we can keep our landing fees extremely low. So competitive rates and charges. But then it's having relationships with the airlines and making a business case. And again, you can't push airlines. You can't badger them. You have to make a solid business case and tell them, how are you going to make money in my market, and how are you going to make more money in my market than you are in some other market?
And, okay.
And in the last 12 months, we've had amazing success. We've gone from 21 nonstops to 33 nonstops. LAX service starts in April.
Okay.
And again, it was just changing the message on that. We had to market. We had to rates. It was putting a business plan and a communication style together that the airlines were receptive to hearing. And so we're seeing some great success. And then when we look out 2019 through the rest of this year, an advanced schedule, we have more capacity in almost every market. We're still talking about more nonstops. 2019 is on track to be the best year in the history of the airport as far as employments go. So
good to hear. Let's leave with what is the market, the destination that might be next or is on your target list?
Let's talk Target. I don't know what's going to be next. Target list is Boston, Toronto.
Okay.
Probably followed. These are the business markets. So Toronto, Boston are probably the top one and two. LAX was obviously number one.
Sure.
And we have to do everything to make LAX work. But LAX is going to work. It looks really good right now. This Toronto, Boston are probably a one and two or two and one, depending on how that goes. And then obviously the leisure, the ultra low cost market. We have a lot of people that are driving for airfares. Ultra low cost carriers are really important to us. They're important to our population. And so we're always after more leisure destinations. We want to, part of this terminal project, we want to build a international port of entry and have a carrier service to Mexico and Cancun and, I mean, all these destinations. So that's all in the pipeline.
All right. Well, you got a lot of plans. It's good to hear. Welcome to Louisville. And
thank you.
Thanks for being on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Heiser Health, your complete health source for preventative medicine and optimum health. Visit the experts of medical doctors and nurse practitioners so they can evaluate your overall health and your health as you age. Heiser Health uses the primary preventative technique of nutrition with real food and effective exercise. If you qualify, you may need hormone replacement to optimize your health. Call the experts at Heiser Health, 502-882-4252.
And there you go, Dan Mann at the airport. Very interesting to talk to somebody who hasn't grown up here and lived here and hear about their impressions of Muhammad Ali. And you know, Dan's got a good approach to it. He said 8%. Interesting that 8% of the people they surveyed or talked to had a negative impression still of Ali, even after all the things that have gone through and the groundswell of attention that happened, occurred after Ali's death a couple of years ago. It was, it's interesting. I know the people that still hold a grudge against Ali from, you know, is not wanting to go to the war and all that from way back in the 60s. I disagree with those people strongly. I remember when I used to go work down at the YMCA in my 20s, you know, there were some guys there who refused to call it Muhammad Ali Boulevard. They called it Walnut Street still. And I think those guys, if they're still alive, they probably are still calling it Walnut Street as a way to show that they don't respect Ali. But, most people do. I thought, in my opinion, they should have named the bridge that they named the Lincoln Bridge after Ali. There's nothing more. Lincoln is not really that closely associated with Louisville the way Ali is. And it would have been, a better move to name that bridge after Muhammad Ali, but they didn't do it. You know, there is the legend of Ali going out. I don't think it was that bridge. I think it was the Second Street Bridge. He supposedly threw his gold medal off of the bridge after he was denied service at a local restaurant. That's what the legend is. Anyway, that's what's going on at the airport. I'm very excited to hear what Dan had to say about that. And we didn't get time to talk about the new what they're working on is making it an international airport. In order to do that, they have to have the customs screening area and all that, and that's in the works. So that soon there will be as Dan said, flights to places like Mexico and international spots. So that's all to come at the airport. So I told you at the top of the show that I actually agree, and this is the first time since he was elected, the very first time I agree with Governor Matt Bevin. On what topic, you say? He is still a jerk. He is arrogant. He is not my kind of governor. I disagree with him on every policy. But the other day, he's caught a lot of flack for this in the media because he said on Terry Miner's show the other day that he thought that getting out of school, calling off schools because it's cold, shows that we're getting soft as a community. And yeah, it is. I've often complained. I mean, here's the thing. They called off school like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the day before because there was a forecast of really frigid cold temperatures. And the and you know, when you talk to the school officials or all these people that are bashing Bevin for his comments today, their excuses are, it's always, oh, anything we do for the safety of the kids is okay. We can't apologize for taking care of the health and safety of the kids. Okay. Well, I don't know where those people were when I was in school, when I was going to school and walking to school when it was cold, or my kids, even 10 years ago, you weren't getting out of school because it was cold. You get out of school if there's ice and snow and it's dangerous to drive on, etc. Sure, but you know, the JCPS officials of 20 and 30 years ago, they were no less concerned about the safety of the kids, yet they sent kids to school when it was cold. Nowadays, it seems to me there's any excuse to let the kids out of school, and part of it, you've heard me talk about this, I blame the local meteorologists, guys like Mark Weinberg, who try to scare you. I always tell people, you know, I talk to him, this is, well, if you listen to the media, you'd be scared to death to go outside, ever, because they make it sound like you're just going to kill yourself. You're going to, something terrible is going to happen if you go outside and it's cold, or if you get a snowflake to fall on your head. But today's kids, you know, Bevin's comment that caught a lot of grief, even from people like Al Roker on NBC, was that it's not a sign of being soft. It's the safety of the kids that they all want to keep in mind. Well, I call bull hockey on that one. That's just my opinion. It might make me unpopular as well, like Bevin is. I saw a story in the paper. The filing deadline for the 2019 election came and went this week. Bevin did sign the papers to run for re-election. He has a 51% disapproval rating, according to the Courier Journal. 51% of people don't like him, and I imagine of the 49%. Remaining, all of those don't actually like him. They're probably somewhere in the middle. That's the worst disapproval rating of any governor in the country. And he adds to it, and it is. Even though I agree with him sort of on this going to school thing, it's such an arrogant way that he does it when he was on the Miner show. You know, he just has an air about him that's arrogant. He also, and he's not getting any grief for this, he fired, you can call it what you want, and he made all the right things to say about why he changed his running mate, but he fired his lieutenant governor. He fired Ms. Hampton, who I went to see at a veterans event a couple of weeks ago, and you know, she is not impressive. You wonder why he picked her in the first place. Maybe because she's African American and a woman, and he needed that to get elected. I don't know, but Bevin basically fired her. When the news came out, when he introduced his new guy, Ralph Alvarado or whatever, he didn't say a whole lot about Hampton, except that he had a lot of meetings with her, and this is what they decided. And, you know, when they come out with it that way, you know it wasn't what they decided. Because I tell you, in her speech, she didn't talk much about politics or anything going on in the world or in the state, but she did talk about how much she liked being lieutenant governor. You know who else was at that veterans event? Was Heather French Henry, and I'm going to be really closely following that race to see if she gets elected. I'm not sure why she chose to run for Secretary of State, but she is, and she has certainly the most name recognition of any of the candidates. There are 8 candidates, 3 other Democrats besides Heather, and certainly want to get her on the show. I'm going to start working on that very soon. I would love to talk to Heather about why she's running and what's going on. Those are the most interesting races of the statewide races. I did note it's kind of interesting that the race for attorney general features Greg Stumbo, the Democrat who was basically lost his seat in the House. I was involved in his. He was the running mate of Bruce Lunsford back in 2007 in the 2007 governor's race, and unfortunately those guys lost to Beshear. Had they won, I might have taken a completely different path and be in politics right now. You don't know. But I was on that campaign, and I like Stumbo. He's a consummate politician, great speaker. He knows how to get a crowd riled up, and he especially loved out there in Eastern Kentucky. So I would not be surprised if he wins his race for Attorney General. I don't see how Heather French Henry can lose in hers, but we'll see. The most interesting thing is the Democrats lined up to challenge Bevin, which include Rocky Atkins, who's been on this show from Eastern Kentucky, Andy Beshear, who I'm not a big fan of, who's the current Attorney General, and my favorite, Adam Edlin, who's running with my good buddy Gil Holland for governor. So that's what's going on in politics right now. Just a couple other things I'd like to mention that are going on that you should know about. Tomorrow, on Thursday, I'm going to a... I got a special invite to a preview of Dave and Buster's in the mall on Shelbyville Road. So we got a big new Dave and Buster's attraction in the city, and looking forward to seeing that this weekend or on Thursday night. Thursday night's a big night because there is a, at the Yum Center, the U of L women are playing Connecticut, and I think it's like number two versus number three. They're two of the top three teams in the country. And in fact, I think I'm probably wrong. You sports guys can correct me, but I think U of L, based on the fact that Notre Dame lost the other day, might be number one at some point. But anyway, that's the biggest women's basketball game that you're gonna hear about around here. At the same time, across the street at Actors Theater, it's press night for the Irving Berlin play, which I'm looking forward to going to see. It is about the American Songbook, and this actor portrays Irving Berlin and sings a lot of songs. It ought to be very entertaining. I'm looking forward to going to that. So that's pretty much what's going on. I will tell you, I appreciate you listening. If you're interested in podcasts, I will tell you that the Louisville.am network is expanding. I have recently purchased the business, and I'm looking for... you got an idea for a podcast? You think you'd be good at this? You want to get your voice out? You want to promote your company? A podcast is the ideal way to do that. Give you something to put on your social media to promote yourself and what you're doing, or just get your opinions out there. You can do stuff. There's a way to make money at it, and it's a proven thing. Podcasts are very popular, and there's no reason you can't produce one of your own. So if you want to do that, get in touch with me. It's Rick Redding. You can find me on Facebook is probably an easy way to get in touch with me, but there's a lot of ways. My email address, richardsredding@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and we can talk about what idea you might have for a regular podcast. All right, so now it's time for the rest of the show. Of course, I was very happy to have Mark Prussian and Marsha Bornstein in here in the Louisville.am studio in St. Matthews. We talked about the Jewish Film Festival, and it's a fascinating list of plays. Not plays, but movies. I'm anxious to. I'm certainly going to go see a couple of them. This one that's most appealing is called Working Woman. A lot of them have subtitles. There's a couple that are English language, and you can look that up. We say in the interview a lot of times where you can find the information about the Jewish Film Festival. It is around for like the 34th, 35th year, and it's a big part of our community. I'm glad that it exists. I'm glad we have this great film festival to go to. So anyway, let's get on with it. Here is my interview with Mark Prussian and Marsha Bornstein. All right, today at the Rusty Satellite Show, we're talking about the Jewish Film Festival, which is coming up very soon. I have with me Marsha Bornstein. Welcome to the show, Marsha.
Thank you very much.
You're the director.
Happy to be here. I am.
You've been at it a few years.
Yes.
Like 30 something?
No, I've worked at the J 34 years.
Okay.
I was the film festival director for maybe 13 years.
Okay. Okay. And one of the people who helps pick all these great films is with me in the studio, a good friend, Mark Prussian. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rick. How are you? Thank you for having me on the show for now the third time. I wonder if I'm one of your most frequent guests.
There's not many that have been over three. I mean, Caroline, who's in the room with us, has been on a few times. But, you know, I'm always grateful to have you on as a sponsor of the show. And every time I get up and don't put contacts in, I remember that I had LASIK at the Eye Care Institute last summer.
Thank you. It was a great procedure.
It was really great. And we'll get on to the festival in a second, but I do want to mention the book that anybody can get down at the Eye Care Institute, One Eye or Two, right? And that's you and Dr. Meyer who did.
We wrote a book, One Eye or Two, Insider Secrets, to help you choose the right LASIK surgeon. Not only does it talk about LASIK, but it gives you all sorts of information to reinforce your understanding of your eye care condition.
Wonderful.
So choose that, and then we'll get back to talking about the Louisville Jewish Film Festival.
Got all things I want to talk about.
You'll be able to read the subtitles better.
Absolutely.
That's right. Now I have just looked through some of the trailers for some of the films, and Marsha, a lot of them have subtitles, right?
They do, because they're international award-winning films.
Okay.
And that's the importance of the festival, because you won't get many opportunities, if any, to see these films.
Okay. And you know, I know that it's called the Jewish Film Festival, but there's I suspect you want to expose these films to a wider audience than just the people that are like members of the Jewish Community Center.
Absolutely. That's part of our mission, because we believe that film is very powerful. It helps to change perspectives. It increases understanding. And it is a bridge in our community to being a more compassionate city. And you'll enjoy it. I mean, they're great films.
Right. Now, I know they're the venues are the Village 8 and Bellarmine, right?
We have six venues.
Okay, six venues.
Yes, and all over the city.
Okay. And you can find them all at where?
JewishLouisville.org/filmfestival.
Okay. All right, let's turn to Mark. Mark, how many of these, how many are there in the?
Rick, thank you for asking me. There are either 13 or 14. Some of them are shorts, and some of them are full-length films. So you asked me a question before we went on the air, which is how many do we watch? So we screen between 25 and 40 films in the summer months to put on 13 or 14 in what is now Louisville's oldest film festival. There's only a couple of film festivals in Louisville, and we are by far the oldest and most established. Let me tell you for a second, though, Rick, about one of my favorites here. For those of you who remember the 1970s TV show Barney Miller, there's a film that I just love featuring Hal Linden, who was Barney Miller. It's called The Samuel Project.
It doesn't have fish in it, does it?
No, it doesn't have fish. I think Abe Vigoda passed away a long time ago. However, it's a coming-of-age story of Hal Linden, who plays Samuel in the movie, who is a grandfatherly figure, I think, in the Los Angeles or in the San Diego area, and how he develops a relationship with his grandchild. That was one of the finest films that I saw this year.
And that is in English.
That is completely in English. Okay. Everything that is not in English has English subtitles, and so they're all easy to understand.
Okay, and I guess they're, even though there's a focus on the Jewish experience, they're universal ideas and concepts, right?
Yeah, I would say that I can't think of any films for which you would have had to sort of have been born Jewish or understand or have to have a understanding of how Judaism works in order to watch any of these films. They're about history. They're about comedy. There's a great one for the LGBTQ audience called The Cake Maker, which will be shown twice at the Speed Cinema on February 21st, a daytime and an evening show about a person who is a businessman in Jerusalem and leads a heterosexual life, and he has frequent business travels to Germany, where he leads a gay lifestyle, and just a fascinating tale there.
Well, that's a true part of the human experience. I'm sure that
film actually won Best Feature Award at the Jerusalem Film Festival.
Okay. How do you find the ones that even to screen? Are there?
There are so many excellent, wonderful films out there. And for our film festival, it has to have Jewish content. So that's the first parameter. And I probably screen maybe 50. And then I have two assistants that are on the committee. And if I'm not sure what to do, I throw it to them. And then they give me their opinion. And the committee sees only the best films.
Okay.
Of the group.
So you see some bad ones.
I do. I do.
Put the ixnay on.
Yes, I'm starting to fall asleep after 20 minutes. That's it.
We have a very democratic group on the committee, and it's essentially whatever we think people would like to watch is our main criteria.
But it has to be good.
Watchable.
Good production values as well.
Okay. So are you all, I guess it comes to my mind comparing to other films. You know, we're in the award season for the Oscars announced the other day. I guess you guys are fans of regular movies too.
Yes, and the movies that we show tend to be eligible more often than not, and sometimes win in the Golden Globes because it's international.
Okay,
it's not sometimes, but not usually Hollywood produced films.
Well, we do have a film that is American, Who Will Write Our History, and it is a documentary, and it is such a fine film that I believe it will be a contender for Best Foreign Film for the Academy Awards next year because it hasn't gone commercial to the theaters yet.
Okay.
And we're particularly thrilled because we have Roberta Grossman, the filmmaker, coming. And this film is about the Jews who lived in the Warsaw Ghetto, and they decided, who's going to write our history? Will it be the Nazis, or is it going to be the Jews? And it was a clandestine group, and they wrote 30,000 papers, had posters, photographs, hid it in milk cans, metal cans, in tunnels.
Wow.
And after the war, found this. It is absolutely an incredible story, and it's not a dry documentary. There's parts of it that are a docudrama, which is recreated.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing film. It's at Bellarmine on February 9th, and we end it with a beautiful catered reception. So that's a spectacular event.
Well, great. And all that's available or render on the Jewish Community Center website.
Details.
All the details are there. It strikes me that, you know, all these films, and you've been doing it for so many years, do you get good crowds? I mean, what kind of audience do you get?
So let me take that one, Rick. We have attendance that ranges on the low side from 100 to on the high side about 350. I'd say on average 150 people attend each film, and that's why we have it at venues all over the city, from Bellarmine to the Speed Cinema to Village 8 Theater, so that different groups who live in different areas can participate. But Marcia brought up another point that I just want to go back to for a second, which is she used the words commercially available. So most of these films have been produced since last February's Film Festival came out, and they're not in the movie theaters yet. There's a distribution process when a film gets produced. So most of everything we show is new material, not yet available.
Can't get it on Netflix.
We don't have the classics
yet. Not yet.
That time frame is shortening, Rick, but it hasn't happened.
Okay. Well, what, like in the past, I mean, I'm sure you've had films that have gone on to a bigger acclaim. Are there any that, you know, that I would recognize? That
The Debt was remade in Hollywood. I'm not sure if Black Book was. We had a couple that we showed the original.
Okay.
And then Hollywood picked it up and redid it.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds very interesting. I want to see some of them. I've already seen a few of them. Are there any others, Mark, that we ought to alert people to go see?
Well, there's a Sunday morning film that's more appropriate for kids that maybe Marcia can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we spoke about Samuel Project,
mm-hmm.
and that we have two showings of that, and one is in the morning, and we also have A Bag of Marbles. That will be a matinee, 12:30 at the Village, and it's a beautiful story of two very young children during the Holocaust. Their parents sent them away to try to save their lives, and it's their journey and the courage and the cunning it took for them to get from Paris to Nice, where they were to hook up with their siblings.
Okay.
I know that playing marbles is really old school, but I love that film, and I think a young teen would enjoy that too, even though marbles is not something that's currently being played.
Yeah, well, yeah, a certain age would not even know that that was a game, but, you know.
We have one this year at the Planetarium. We've never done that, but we have collaborated with the Naimani Memorial Lecture from U of L. And this is the 10th man, and it has a lot of humor in it. It is about the Jewish quarters in Buenos Aires. And this man lives in New York for 15 years, estranged from his father. His father summons him, come home, he needs help.
Okay.
And it's very good film. It's in Spanish. And following that, we have a speaker who is David William Foster. And he comes from Arizona State, where he's a regent professor.
Wow.
And he'll talk about Argentine culture.
A lot of really great and interesting stuff coming up. It's good weather around here to watch movies, right?
It is.
Preparing for this cold flash. But anyway, thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate it. And a reminder to our audience, if you want to see the schedule and the details about all the films, I've sat here and watched about half the trailers already, so I know a little bit about it. So we go to where, Marcia?
Jewish Louisville, spell out Louisville. .org/film festival.
Okay, very good. And the first one starts, Mark?
The first one starts Thursday, February 7th.
All right, coming up very soon. So anyway, that's the Jewish Film Festival. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you, Rick. Be sure and have me a fourth time so I can be the record beater.
Hope you make it out there to some of the films at the Jewish Film Festival. Always good. And it was great to hear from Dan Mann. Appreciate him, his hospitality over at the airport. Thanks for being a guest on the Rusty Satellite Show. There's a lot of things going on in town, and I do want to give a quick shout-out. My friend Angie Fenton is in the news. She got a full-time gig over there at the Great Day Live show on WHAS-TV, and very happy for her. Always happy to hear good things about Angie. And, you know, there's a lot of guests. If you go to the RustySatelliteShow.com page, just go back. You got a lot of free time because you're inside because of the weather and all that, and it's going to get worse this week, I think. I think we're getting more snow and, you know, more days out of school for the kids. I know I'm rambling here, but I got one more point I wanted to make about the school closings. All this talk about the safety of the kids and all this crap that the people put out about schools, well, they don't realize what an impact it has because everybody else has to go to work. They don't call off work. Everybody that's got a job has to go to work. And this includes parents of these young kids who can't leave their kids. Their kids are too small to leave them home. It really puts an economic and... puts them in an economic crisis in some cases. A lot of people have jobs they can't miss. They can't call in sick, or they don't get paid, or they get terminated. You know, if you don't show up for work, you get fired. And calling off school because it's cold is something that puts a lot of those people in jeopardy too. So I've got a lot of points. I know a lot of people disagree on this topic. It's a hot topic, but me and Bevan, we're together on this one, as hard as that is to believe. All right, that's it for the Rusty Satellite Show. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back with another show next.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. Rick will be back in the Louisville.am studio with two more of the most interesting people in the Ville next week. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. To suggest a future guest or inquire about doing your own podcast, get in touch with Rick through Facebook or Twitter, or send an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. To see the full list of guests who have appeared on the show since 2013, go to rustysatelliteshow.com.